one of the projects I've worked on is was a nice 1920s George Washington Smith that the couple had just moved from Virginia, and they were in the process of moving in, got evacuated during the fire, and then came back in for a couple weeks, and they're like, oh, we really don't want to evacuate for this rainstorm. And they're just north of Oprah's property, and they're like, fine, we'll evacuate again. We just want to like live in our house. And half the house got taken out by boulders.
Welcome to Architecture, Design, and Photography. Today we have Gavin, I'm blanking on last name.
Studer.
Studer, that's right. Gavin Studer, who we actually just met over the phone last week, and I only answered your call. I don't usually pick up calls because they're usually telemarketers, but your caller ID came up as Oxnard, California, where we rent a house in February. And I was like, oh, I hope our house didn't burn down or something that we were supposed to rent, so I picked it up, and it was you. And lo and behold, you're an architect from Ventura, California, where we spend a lot of time in the winter, who's actually moved out to Maine. And so that's pretty interesting to me, all the things around why someone would move from that area to here and why someone from here would run to there in the winter. And but yeah, similar backgrounds as far as design and geography and everything else. And so I thought it'd be interesting if we just sat down and shot the breeze about what you're doing, what I'm doing, where we've lived and are living and going and all that. So thanks for coming by.
Yeah, no problem. Pleasure to be here.
How you doing?
Doing well. I'm about 7 days into living in Maine.
Really? Seven days in?
Yep.
I didn't know it was that soon. This is
interesting. You were one of the first calls I made.
You'll have to keep that close.
You were one of the first calls that I made, so I definitely wanted to start networking, and I'd seen your work.
Oh, cool.
And I know 30 by 40 workshop is
okay. So you came across us through us working with Eric?
Probably, yeah. He's got quite the YouTube presence in the architectural realm.
Oh, so. Absolutely. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. The way he works and how he's figured out his different kind of bases of income and everything else to allow him to work as a creative.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Really inspiring for this next generation of architects.
Yeah. Have you gotten his books that he has?
I have not. I gotta save up for that. I'm just kidding. I'm thinking about it. I probably will at one point.
Yeah, no, I definitely recommend it. And if you have time, go up and see him if you can touch base with him. He's a really interesting guy. He's got really good ideas and
for sure.
Very similar to me, just couldn't take the working in someone else's office thing.
Yep.
Just as a personality trait, maybe made a difficult employee or bad employee. I made a bad employee. Maybe he was just more difficult when is within his own head of being an employee.
No, that definitely resonates with me as a person. So
really,
yeah, he speaks to a lot of younger people.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, the freedom that he kind of exudes in his filmography and his process. It just seems very almost happy-go-lucky. I mean,
it's funny interacting with him. He's very he's a very disciplined guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but still has that kind of that outlook on like, yeah, this is possible, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool.
The idealistic part of it is very inspiring.
Right.
Yeah.
So you grew up in California, went to architecture school somewhere out there, I'd imagine.
I did. I also started actually in Arizona. I went to Arizona State University.
Oh, okay.
And I spent 2 years there. I actually just applied online. It was like a couple paragraphs. You fill out a form. I didn't look at any schools. I just kind of didn't really want to. So I was accepted because I think everyone gets accepted, or at least during that time period it was.
Right.
I think it went from around, when I went, it was like 30,000 plus people. And when I left, it was around 55,000 people attending. And I think it's one of the largest schools on the planet. But I spent 2 years there, started out in general business. And I was walking next to a friend of mine in a class. And he was all dressed up with a tie and slacks, button-up shirt tucked in. And he was rolling a basswood model of like a modern pavilion.
Right.
And I asked him, what degree is that? And he said, it's architecture. It's awesome. I spent all night working on this and designing this, and now I get to present it to a panel of judges, and they'll critique me on it. And I said, sign me up. I didn't know at the time what I wanted to do, but that sounded awesome to me.
That's interesting. Like I went into basically pre-med. I was thinking I was going to be a dentist, and did pre-med, and just I realized like I wasn't going to be able to hack it. And a friend of mine was in architecture school, and he was describing like the stuff he was doing like that, and I was just like, whoa, that sounds like fun. And when I went into architecture school, it was like nothing I'd ever done in school before. Yeah. And just naturally it was like good at it. Now that was really nice, but then for me the school of architecture, very interesting, very creative and everything else. The real world of it, working in an office with all the minutia and the consistency of place and everything else, wore on me a lot. And so that was really hard to kind of deviate from that, especially for me going from, all right, I've got my master's and I've practiced for 3 years and I've got all this history and, you know, baggage that I brought with me to get here. Mm-hmm. And now I'm just going to leave it, you know, and I basically did at that point, not knowing what I was going to do. Luckily it's worked out for me well, but that was very scary. But if you can do it right, like that's the encouragement I see through Eric Reinhold, is that the way he's practicing architecture, to me, if I stayed in architecture, I imagine I might have ended up doing something similar to that, I would think. I don't know. But where do you see yourself going? What do you enjoy in the process of architecture?
Well, I mean, I've had varied experiences in architecture working for various employers, and I actually did get the pleasure to work for myself for a few years. I worked for myself for 3 years full-time.
Yeah.
And so I had some good clients and some good projects for my age, 26, 27, 28 years of age. Wasn't licensed, but I did some big projects, and actually the last one I ended up doing that was almost permitted in Bel Air, California. It was a guest house in LA County. That ended up, the client added a third story at the very end of the project.
And at that point, they needed a stamp?
And a third story.
Really? So you California. Can do 1 to 2 stories, no.
So it never really came up. I mentioned to the client, you know, we could have the civil or structural stamp these. And I don't have my stamp, so I was never planning on stamping it, but it turned out the builder quit anyway. Second round plan check. I never had contact directly with the owner. I think the owner's representative contacted me at one point, and I tried to help them. I got them all the plans, sent them down to LA County for printing and submittal, and I don't know. Maybe they submitted them. I don't think they did.
I've heard California is really financially preventative, if that's the right word, on if you're doing new construction, whereas renovation is much more feasible because of just fees and stuff.
Yeah, time after time, I hear stories about how people left a chimney, or they left one wall in the house.
Right, to just
to call it a renovation or a remodel.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and that's for the permit process, the permitting fees, just to reduce the timeline, reduce the cost.
Yeah.
And then you still basically get a 99.9% new build.
Right. So are you practicing in California still while being in Maine?
Correct. So it's kind of that day after day, same spot type of thing. I'm working remote for the firm that I've been working for the past 3 years.
How's that going?
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
I would think working remote could have some real issues, but it's enough technology to solve all of that.
Yeah, a good internet connection and you know, video conferencing or screen sharing is a big part of it. And my employer currently has two other guys who are remote, one in Santa Cruz, California, and one in Portland, Oregon. And it does definitely limit your ability to be more of a project architect or manager in terms of site visits.
Right.
Or creating as
a long flight.
Yeah, for that, for me. It's closer for those other two guys, but I somehow ended up on the opposite corner
right.
of the map.
Right.
But
so 7 weeks in, what do you think of Maine so far?
7 days in.
7 days in. Sorry.
I like it a lot. Yeah. I'm not pleasantly surprised. I've always heard good things about Maine, and Maine is kind of almost like has a mystique about it. It's just like a lot of wilderness and a lot of coastline and not a lot of people. So there's kind of just an unknown that comes with that.
It's a nice place. I actually got to get out surfing a little bit this morning in these
nice
conditions. It was nice. Sun up and offshore wind and I think there's like two other people out, so.
Perfect.
Yeah, and in Ventura, you're just not going to get that.
No,
but
and
it'll be warmer.
That's one of the reasons why I didn't really surf a lot was it's just kind of a line. You've got a lineup.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know.
A lot of people have to fight over things. And
I guess I don't like waiting or something. Waiting my turn.
Right.
It's fine. I actually kind of felt a small amount of guilt for when people asked me if I surf, and I said, well, not really. I kind of felt bad. I felt like I should, especially living so close. I was about a mile from C Street.
Oh, wow.
And I would surf fair weather just in board shorts.
Right, right. I found actually when I've been out there that I surf C Street less and less just because it's so crowded, and I'll go down towards the harbor or Pierpont area.
Yeah, Silver Strand's a big one. Probably gets busy, though, when the swells.
Well, the Silver Strand, they just get really angry if you're not from there.
That's a little bit more, yeah.
Yeah.
Locals only, definitely. Yeah, no, I love California, but I'm also not looking back. It's kind of a thing that I've done over and over.
Yeah.
Just.
So did you grow up in Ventura? Or?
Yep, born and raised in Ventura. Oh, wow. And went to school, like I said, in Arizona for 2 years. Absolutely hated it. And
Arizona?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Why
Phoenix.
Was that?
Just the city is I, you know, when I was single, I didn't have any issues with living in a city, like a large city, but it didn't feel like a city. It was just flat, one-story development
right.
with six-lane roads gridded through the, it was a grid. It's a grid and it's flat and it's hot and kind of relentless. Like you could, you know, I had a friend, that same friend that I had met, and he was kind of the one that got me started on the architecture path. He lived in Gilbert and I lived in central Phoenix, and it was about a 45 minute drive each way at 70 miles per hour the whole way. Just huge open, nicely paved freeways, but it was.
How do you feel about the town structures here in New England?
It's amazing. I can't believe the CVS and the DMV are such beautiful little
right?
quaint buildings.
Like
it's so different.
Yeah,
so different.
The same reaction when I was in architecture school in Michigan. A friend of mine, Caleb, that came out here. He and his wife moved out here, and they're like even the Taco Bell's in this like.
Yeah.
Quaint little, you know.
My wife just mentioned to me, we were driving yesterday, that McDonald's is cute.
Right. We must have been going by the Freeport McDonald's.
It was Kennebunk.
Kennebunk, right, right.
We actually got to go for a hike yesterday on one of the loops down in the Rachel Carson.
Oh, yeah,
Preserve.
That's a super nice area.
Super,
good mountain
super
biking
awesome.
And stuff too.
There's mountain biking in there?
Oh, yeah, you can. In,
on the coast?
Let's see, Smith Preserve. Which
yeah.
I think is part of
I gotta do
Rachel
that.
Carson. Yeah, it's really
looking
nice.
Looking forward to that in
there.
The east in the East Coast Greenway there. The
yeah, the
Eastern
now the,
Trail.
The
Eastern
difference
Trail.
With mountain biking out here is that you're gonna run into roots nonstop, so it's a lot more like bah, 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 bah,
yeah.
And so you have to get like the suspension or a fat tire bike, which kind of just kind of
yeah.
makes them all kind of marshmallow out,
I
which
gotta,
is nice.
I gotta check out the fat bike thing. I have
yeah.
a gravel bike, like a Monster Cross bike. It's called. It's just a road bike with up to 2-inch width.
Okay. Now, have you been up to Portland much?
I've only been to New England in the winter, and one of the winters that I came to visit my brother-in-law in York, we took an afternoon trip to Portland.
Yeah.
And we just went to the old port, I think it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. The Biddeford here is so much nicer than it was even 15 years ago. And supposedly the old port used to be just this horrendous, like, run-down, neglected, scary place, and now it's all just, like, you know, really quaint mom-and-pop, you know, and hip shops and stuff, and super nice area. So it's neat to see each one of these towns finding its new life after losing, you know, the initial industries that caused them. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for architecture in that realm.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how
that stuff excites me. I mean, I remember watching it happen in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the revitalization of the brick buildings, rehabbing them as facades and then building those dense apartments. And I think that was San Francisco as well.
Yeah, San Francisco.
But they only really kept the facade just because it was a concrete podium with high density mid-rises or high-rises. Well, mid-rises, I think. And that stuff was always fun to me. But L.A. and San Diego, where I finished out my schooling in downtown San Diego, it never had old enough structures to kind of
do that kind of stuff. Now, the Gaslamp District kind of does, doesn't it?
Gaslamp has that feel with the brick. I don't know how much of that is actually truly original, but I guess it is the oldest downtown part of downtown San Diego. There's so many districts. Like, there's Horton Plaza in Gaslamp, and then East Village is where I went to school. And when I went to school there, it just got the light rail going through there, and then Petco Park had been finished by Antoine Predock. He designed that, which is an amazing stadium. It's great. And so that whole East Village area was just coming online. It was going from crack houses to art district.
Right.
And then, and now it's spreading even more east. It's just downtown San Diego. From the time I arrived there in 2008, and then I left in 2010, just going to the beaches. I went to Wind and Sea Beach in La Jolla a lot and skimboarded there. And it was almost empty the first summer I went there, and then by the last summer it was just packed. It was just growing and growing and growing. Yeah. I mean, San Diego is
we have a
big place.
Job coming up in La Jolla in December. It'll be a nice time to be in La Jolla. So
yes, it will. Wind and Sea Beach is awesome.
So you're early 30s?
Yep.
How do you think do you think there'll be a generational difference in how people practice architecture? Do you get a feeling of a generational difference that might potentially change, like, the whole van life, people realizing earlier that living like you're pseudo retired is a nicer way to live your entire life rather than work your butt off and then retire when you have, like, a couple years left? Do you think there'll be some type of different way that architecture is practiced that'll start to become much more sole proprietors? Or what do you think? You see anything there?
I know the licensure process, at least in California, well, and the national testing is pretty, it cuts out a lot of people in the same way that architecture school cut out people. I mean,
right.
I remember after my first classes in my third year, there are still people dropping out. And then by my fifth year, there's people dropping out during the fifth year studio. Mm-hmm. And then just statistically, you can read the statistics on the NCARB website about how many people go on to get licensed.
Right.
I think there is a little bit more knowledge about what you actually need to do to get licensed and how much you could actually do on your own without a license.
Right.
But that's a pretty big decision to make pretty early on in your late 20s about whether or not you want to get licensed. And if you don't get licensed, at least in California, you're restricted to, I think it's like maybe 5,000 square foot, two story plus a basement home.
Hmm. I mean, that's a lot of,
that gives
that's
you
a lot of work. Still.
That gives you work.
Yeah.
But it's also just this very small amount of work.
I'm amazed
compared
that
to all of architecture. I mean,
even with two-story structures being in such a high earthquake zone, that they'd still allow things to be built without an architect. It amazes me.
Typically, just the civil or structural would stamp that.
Really? Okay. So you have
if
to
the,
have
if the plan, it's a, it comes down to the plan checker's discretion. And so one of the last projects I worked on was a commercial project that I actually got to stamp, which was exciting. And the owners of this brewery in Carpinteria had done the drawings. He went to architecture school, one of the owners, and he was about to get a permit, and then they switched the plan checker on him. And that plan checker was like, you need to have a licensed professional draw these plans.
Right.
And then same with mechanical, electrical, plumbing. And then so I learned that you don't actually need all of those engineers to stamp the drawings. We were able to get a specialty, just basically a licensed plumbing contractor to stamp the plumbing as the plumbing plans that I drew. So it's just so much of it is you just learn by doing. And so
right.
When I worked for myself, that was a huge jump from drafting bathrooms and importing DWGs and cleaning up consultants' drawings to when I got my next job, which is my current position, actually showing that I'm able to take a plan set all the way through this
right.
incredibly long and circuitous process that now is about 3 to 5 years for a custom home.
Right. Oof.
At least in the Santa Barbara County, Santa Barbara, Montecito
right.
districts of the coastline, there's just so much red tape.
Right.
There's the California Coastal Commission, there's planning commissions, there's architectural review boards.
Right.
Like I did a modern home renovation. It was about a $1.2 million remodel of a beach house. And that was two architectural review boards. It was a Santa Barbara County review board and then the Summerlin Community Neighborhood Design Review Committee. And they both had 5 to 8 licensed professionals. And I think they have one neighborhood citizen member as part of the committee. And so I had to go to both of those back to back to back to back about 4 times each.
Right.
So it was about 8 meetings
what
to
kind
review
of,
the design.
What kind of reviews did they have for you?
I remember one architect, it's just modern, it's black. I cut off the eaves, it's standing seam roof, black
yep.
standing seam.
I think I siding. Saw that on your website.
Yeah, and one of the architects was like, you know, I think you should explore doing a kind of an oval balcony off of, you know, part of this. It's a long balcony, just cable railing, it's just very straight, it's just very rectilineal, very modern, very Californian, and it was just, I had to tell him, yeah, we'll look into that, you know. Maybe we want to do like a half-rounded
balcony.
Maybe
we won't, but thanks for your thought.
You just have to be cordial and friendly, and you have to yeah. smile a lot and just try to not take it personally. Like my client came to one of the final meetings where we were discussing between dark charcoal and straight black siding in a
right.
community where they basically say you can do like a light yellow or a cream. Those are the neighborhood
right,
colors,
right.
They tried to have standards. And they said no. The community board said no, we're definitely not doing a black house. But I had to ask the Santa Barbara County Board, you know, do you guys make the final say? And they said yes. And the client was there, and they were like standing up and saying, no, we want to do black. We love this color. We love this house. And we went outside into the sun and looked at all the colors, and they're like, I guess this one's okay, like a dark charcoal that was a little bit lighter than the dark.
Right.
We ended up just doing the darkest black, which is what they wanted. Basically like a jet black.
Right. Oh man, all that red tape, that would drive me nuts.
It was, I loved it. I mean, that's what I kind of love about it. It's just the challenge. I can't believe it. It's that challenging to do a remodel.
Right. Well, that's California.
But that was just one example. It took about 2 years to do all the permitting from design through permitting.
And have you sat for your boards and gotten those, or is that still ahead of you?
No, I got my California license last year.
Now, is there reciprocity from California to Maine at all, or?
In Maine, it's about 3 pages of experience you have to fill out if you don't have the NCARB certificate, which is, I think it's $1,000 you could pay NCARB to send your transcripts and
yep.
experience to Maine, or you can fill out the paperwork and pay $140 to Maine.
So it's $860 couple days of filling out paper, basically.
Yeah, and in Maine, there's no continuing education, and you don't ever have to renew it. So in California, you have to renew every 2 years.
Yep.
And you have to you have to renew every 2 or 3 years. I forget now already, but I had to renew it a few months after I got it. So I had to do five or six hours of continuing education, which is typically accessibility or universal design-based, like reading.
So do you think you'll be looking to hang your own shingle here in Maine, or do you think you'll be looking to be employed somewhere here in Maine or stay working remotely? Don't know.
Well, I'm open to all things.
Yeah.
I'm just excited to meet new people and start networking and explore the area, explore the nature that's here, and who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Now, talk to me about the things that drove you out of California to actually consider living somewhere else rather than where you were raised.
Well, like I said, I loved it there, and
I love it.
I didn't want to go.
I'm not from there. I didn't want to leave. Great.
Yeah, it's. I think everyone can agree the weather is phenomenal. The fire weather, on the other hand, was getting a little out of hand. While we were packing, it was raining ash again after. I think last year we were evacuated because we were up in the hillsides during the Thomas fire. And I had been evacuated twice growing up from that same home. I was renting my parents' house for the last 7 years. But the thing that drove me out was there was no way that we were going to be able to afford a home on my single income.
Right.
My wife is stay-at-home homeschooling mom. So
yeah.
At least
and
for
you
now.
Have kids?
Two little ones. Two little boys.
How old?
5.5 and 3.5.
Oh man, you're not far behind me.
Finn
and Kip. I have Simon and Grayson, 8 and 10.
I'll be there in a few days. Basically, it feels like.
Yeah.
It's going faster and faster.
Oh, that's cool though. To make the decision to stay home. That's a hard one, but a good one for sure, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, They're going to get all their ideas equal ear and hopefully a lot of form making early on.
Nice.
I hope we have a good workshop for them.
Yeah.
I did some woodworking for a couple years, built a few pieces for a few clients, mostly floating shelves and coffee tables.
Yep.
And I built our dining table, which didn't fit in the U-Haul, unfortunately. So that's still back at the house. Maybe I'll sell it on Craigslist remotely. But... I also did some metalworking, which was funny. I think it was on Facebook when I was back on Facebook. A chef. Did you know Dinner in a Movie?
I've heard of that.
TV show. The chef from that TV show lives in Ojai, which is where, just near where, that's where I was working, and that's where I went to my last year of high school. And he contacted me through Facebook because he saw that I'd been making some furniture. And he contacted me about creating an outdoor prep kitchen sink table, and because he was working in the garden, there was like a movement for school gardens and using that food in the kitchens and creating a menu for these public schools.
Oh, cool.
There's apparently funding for it, and so I spent a couple years, I think it was about 200 hours in my garage, using stainless steel panels, aluminum angle, and pop riveting it all together to make an outdoor kitchen.
Oh, wow.
That I completed two prototypes, and we made an Indiegogo campaign, and it ended up just kind of fizzling. I think the product, it was kind of a Swiss Army knife. I think it did too many things. It wasn't good at one thing. It had a decent sink, an RV sink, a Dometic sink. It had a Snow Peak burner called the Baja burner built into the table. The table flipped up. It had a cabinet for storage.
Oh.
It was all stainless steel or aluminum, outdoor, weatherproof.
Was this like a mobile thing, or was it
It was meant to be mobile. It was meant to go in the back of a car or truck. But it had a cutting table, a cutting board as well. It had all sorts of stuff. It was pretty cool.
So I keep thinking there's a market like, okay, so here, you know, you moving all the way across the country because essentially housing and everything was unaffordable in a place where you grew up, which is kind of a sad thing that anyone...
My parents didn't want to give me their house.
Jeez. Well, there's an easy way to fix that. But it, to me, I mean, my wife and I looked at a long time, like, all right, maybe we can build our own, like with our own hands and stuff. And you look at the time involved and everything. And, but it seems like there's a business opportunity somewhere in there too, because the most difficult and money intensive parts of houses are the bathroom and kitchen, right? Because there's just so much going on there. If you could somehow make a prepackaged thing, like here's your bathroom and here's your kitchen, mm-hmm. that's built like in a 10 by 10 shipping container, like part of it's the bathroom that's in the 10 by 10 maybe, mm-hmm. with a little bit of closet, and then the kitchen's on the outside, right? And you have this thing that you can just ship,
drop
and
ship,
put in place. Like, you just need four walls and a roof, and then that, and you're square one. You have a roof, you're, you know, over your head.
It's basically, and even all your utilities in
all your, it's
your infrastructure.
Yeah, all of that right there. That, and do the like, we have an electric heat pump outdoor. I mean, yep. You could have everything on that one thing, shipped to site, dropped on the foundation for that bit.
Well, have you seen on Amazon? There's a new movement towards these. They're basically tiny homes that are being completely designed and built and flat pack shipped from China. And
from
they're
China.
Like,
that's,
you go
scary.
On Amazon.com, search house.
Yeah.
And it's like 10, 15 grand.
Really?
And this is a new thing. And this
you,
is for like
you
ADUs
just assemble it
and
yourself.
Stuff. Because ADUs are such a.
What are ADUs?
California passed a law allowing certain size lots to build an additional dwelling unit because of the housing crisis.
Oh, right, right, right.
So it's a second dwelling unit, and
ooh,
these
I'm
little.
I'm gonna get me one of these.
But the I think the quality control and, but there's several companies I think vying to kind of become. They have weird names. You
right.
know? They're all from.
They didn't bother to westernize their names.
Yeah, they don't have. Yeah, it's not like Americanized yet. It's mm-hmm. basically they. They sell these things and they purport, like, you know, you add on solar panels for this much.
Right.
You
right.
add a kitchen for this much. And it, some of them look like shipping containers.
Right.
I haven't done a ton of research into them, but I'm actually interested in the concept of just, because it's so much cheaper to make them there, you know.
Yeah. If you could get it made there quality.
If you could get the quality control in there.
Like
control.
If you could design it into a 10 by 10 shipping container, because they make the, or mm-hmm. the 8 by 10, only 10 foot long one. Get like your heating, air conditioning, kitchen, bathroom, all in there somehow, right? To where maybe your kitchen's on the outside or something. But then you can ship that as is. Like mm-hmm. there's all these cost things that you're putting into one thing, and then it's delivered to site, and all you're worrying for on site is, you know,
bedrooms,
adhering that in, and yeah, like
really?
Not even that, just big open space, you know, starting
yeah, just
out.
A, just make a big vaulted gable.
Oh, no vaulted gables, shed roof, just
shed roof,
windows. And
sure. What, I mean, that's the thing. It's they're all 100 square foot or less, because
right.
that's basically, I think 99 square feet and less is no permit is needed.
Yeah. There you go.
But that's very small for an additional home, because technically,
yeah, that's super small.
You could do much larger than that and still be within the ADU
right.
code.
Hmm.
So anyway, I don't know how big you can. I mean, that's a pretty big thing to be shipping, is 100 square foot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that's here. I just don't know who to buy from. And if someone wants to, yeah. you know, sponsor us to buy one and investigate
right.
and review,
Indiegogo.
Do a review, we could do a review of the
right.
quality and the architectural styling.
I have a lot right over here that's like, I think it's 60 by 60 that I got a long time ago, just because as I was transitioning during and out of architecture, practicing architecture, I was kind of thinking along the lines of property development as well, so I could be a little more my own boss. And I would just scour the city for weird buildable lots, mm-hmm. and I found one over here, but still haven't built on it. And that was probably 10, 15 years ago, easy. But I keep thinking of doing like a shipping container tower or something there, because it's a very industrial area, and it would be really cool to just do like 40 by 40, but just kind of Lincoln log them and infill with glass, you know, and do like
yeah.
five stories. But
yeah,
that's
I think
a lot of money.
I think the shipping container thing has had a decent run. I know in the experience I've had just hearing about it or seeing it happen, California's definitely experimented with it.
Right.
I've seen architects experiment with it. I almost got hired for a full-time job just to build out a wood shop and metal shop mm-hmm. in a shipping container that would then be the workshop to build out the rest of the shipping containers on the site for an architect's office.
Oh, cool.
Never came to fruition on a lot in Santa Barbara.
The thing I found is they work well for forming space, but the spaces they create within themselves are really tight. So you could maybe do a bedroom, office, bathroom, mm-hmm. but beyond that, it's pretty unpleasant.
Yeah, no living rooms, no great rooms. I mean,
yeah.
The other thing is, I think money-wise, it's about the same as stick framing if you were to just
stick build
something. Because as soon as you cut a hole in a shipping container, it compromises the structural wall.
Yeah.
And then you then have to build a steel-framed wall around that window before installing a window, if you were to stack them.
I mean,
either way, you need a frame to mount the window to because it's a
It's
a zigzaggy wall.
I have I finally got one as our immediate garage for the house that we built. We could afford to do the house, but didn't have a garage. So I was like, I'm going to get a shipping container. So my idea is to build it into eventually just like a barn and have it as one side of the barn, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Shed roof?
No. We have to do a gable, I believe. My wife wants to put solar panels on it, which I could still do a shed roof and put solar panels on, I know, but to match the form of the house we already have and the added space up there for potentially like a guest room or something
fully usable space.
So we'll see.
Exciting.
We just need a barn space or something. We have like so much stuff just sitting outside right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, our kids' bikes and
a
tractor, and, like, just all this stuff that would be nice to not have rain and snow all over all the time.
It's so crazy. It's so different than California here.
Oh, yeah. It's
no one has a tractor. No one has a barn.
Right.
Like, you have to be a millionaire, a multi-millionaire to have a barn.
That's funny. Yeah.
It's not like a thing. It's like, it's not like you inherited a farm or anything like that. It's like, if you have a farm in California, you are
living out on the ranch.
Person.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. I mean,
it's like the height of just California farm, you know,
right.
It's like a big style out there.
We were able to get like 14 acres under a mile from the coast for a song, essentially. I mean, it came with a lot of red tape of how to get access to the lot and everything, but you know,
you just have to ask.
Yeah, I mean, my wife figured it out and
got
it done. Yeah, it's funny, like I'm the one with the architecture degree and everything else, but she's the one with the like people skills, so she made it happen.
Good team.
She'd kind of be like, we're at this crossroads and we can't do it because of that. And so then I'd be like, well, we could do this, that, and the other. But if I try and get anyone to do this, they'll just stop me immediately because I'm not likable. So why don't you do it? You're the nice
person. You're likable, Trent.
Maybe in this format, but not in like if I'm going to your bureaucratic office of whatever. And I don't know.
But
there's
it's
something.
So cute. I mean, there's, you know, wood siding and it's beautiful colors. In California, going to the bureaucratic office is like, we're talking like super old buildings that just have terrible wayfinding, no parking.
Really?
Yeah, it's.
Now, I gotta say that town hall or whatever in Ventura.
Yeah, it's
there,
known
that's
for that.
Super nice.
The city hall is known for being beautiful there.
Yeah, my boys and I just took we hiked from where we were staying in the Pierpont area up through Ventura, like went lengthwise through that building just because I wanted to see it. And then we went up to Grant Park and then back down. It was pretty
cool.
Did
you do the botanical gardens?
We did. We went through the botanical gardens. I think they were closed that day, but we still went through. So
good.
There was like people
working. It used
to
be free last year, but after the fire, they built all the shipping containers.
Oh, yeah. We saw a couple shipping containers. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was like people working there and just like, yeah, you can come through right now. Don't worry about it.
Oh, great. That's good.
Okay.
I'm glad they were nice.
Yeah, but so architect in Maine. Wife is staying home with the kids.
Correct.
Where are you live? You're in Wells or York?
Wells right now.
Wells? Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming renting. And
yeah, renting just until April, and then it turns back into a summer rental.
Oh, so you got a seasonal.
Expensive for
right,
us.
Right.
So I don't know. I got to find something.
Yeah.
I got to find a place.
Yeah, now is a bad time to buy, though, unfortunately.
In general, yes.
Yeah, in general. I mean, at any
point. The housing market
is crazy.
In the United States, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and probably
the we sold places. Our house not that long ago, and even since then it's gained probably $40,000 in equity, and so
okay,
it's crazy.
Good to know.
But
yeah, everyone we've talked to has been like, it's so expensive here now.
Yeah, well, I mean, we moved here in 2003, and I remember being in architecture school, going online and looking at what was available for places, and it was weird because we moved here, and then I was like, hey, I've seen that, and I've seen that.
Yeah.
It was like kind of seeing celebrities or something. It was weird. But
you've been following them.
Yeah, I'd been following them online. But I started looking into like the property values at the town hall once we moved here, and I saw like in the late 90s, houses were going for like $80,000 that at the point when we were looking in by like 2004 and 5, like they were almost tripled in value.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, geez, just like 6 years ago, you could have put your money in and just, and then of course, 2005 to 8, it just kind of,
yeah.
But it was interesting to see that that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, we got into a house that we didn't lose our shirts on or anything, and I ended up like tearing every single wall out of the thing, being a typical architect. So,
yeah. Well, especially if you get one of these older homes. It was
like a early 1900s.
Yeah,
probably.
Exactly. Yeah. You kind of just have
it had
to.
Like every room was
you
cordoned off.
To.
Like every single room had doors. So like, yeah, it's crazy. But yeah.
Old, and apparently they don't have like insulation. So if you can add insulation.
Ours did not have insulation.
Yes.
And we had like the original windows when we moved in too.
Yep.
So
single pane.
In the winter, like the windows would just kind of shutter, and you just put your hand over near there and you just feel a breeze. it was so bad. And they had in the living room, they had these magnetic windows that you'd put in over them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There was a big magnetic strip around it, and you had these plastic with like little, on the side, it was like a little accordion.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd set it on the sill, and then it would go, you know,
yeah,
and
pop
stick
in
to the window. So during the winter, when there'd be like a nor'easter, you'd see these plastic added things, they'd suck in, and like the reflection would
go
weird.
Pressure.
Yeah, and then it would like go the other way. And yeah, so do you know what a nor'easter is?
I've heard the term.
This is great. Yeah, so a nor'easter.
I'm a
yeah, so down east is neither down nor really east. It's like you'd have to travel northeast really from here to get to
like the magazine
down east.
Is called
right.
There's a magazine called down.
But it's a sailing term. Like you're going downwind, you would sail down east to get to that area, I guess.
Okay.
I might be butchering it because I didn't grow up here either, but that's that. Like a nor'easter is basically the wind will howl northeast in a typical storm here. The way storms spin, you just end up getting wind from the northeast.
Okay.
And that's why they call it a nor'easter. And they're really fun because you'll just have like raging storm like you really don't get in California. I mean, just intense raging storm, and then the next day the wind will go northwest and it just clears out and it's just crystal blue skies.
Perfect.
And everything covered in snow, and it's
Ooh.
It's just like super beautiful. And to go to the
Wonderland.
Coast in that situation where there's like snow going right down to the water and then this bright blue sky and all this sun, and
can't wait.
It's really cool. It's a different deal for sure. And like you know, to go to school in the Midwest where I was at, like a sheet of gray would just move in November and not go away till like May.
Yeah.
And that was bad. But here you have these really intense like few days of storm and then, you know, these intense days of bright.
Okay. That's really, yeah, nice. I mean, so far the wind, like 8 to 9 PM, the wind just howls. Like,
yeah.
That's pretty interesting. That even in itself, that's more weather Right. Like we would, every few years you get intense downpours, like a semi-tropical storm mm-hmm. will come in, and then we'll get our firestorms where a fire will rage.
So you were in Ventura, not this winter, but the last winter, where like in February there were, it like rained solid for a week.
Yep, it'll do that.
Holy cow.
And there's like that landslide in Montecito.
Yeah.
And then La Conchita, obviously, years and years ago. It's always interesting to me. 10 people died in La Conchita in a landslide, and it's still covered. But then Montecito, you know, people die. And it's like this crazy operation for months and months where they're every single Caterpillar machine is digging out every single home. And I'm glad that they did that, but it's just like, it's, don't forget La Conchita.
Right.
It's like,
it always spooked me on the I think north side of Grant Park, those houses on that part of Ventura around going up to Ojai.
Mm-hmm.
They go like right up to that hillside, and there's part of the hillside where you can see it's almost like,
oh, off the avenue. Yeah, I had a buddy who was looking at a house there.
And it's just like, you like, look at that hill,
I'm not
and you're like,
buy a house
ooh,
there.
It's just like wanting to just come down on you.
Yeah, one of the geotechnical guys I've worked with at my current firm, he's been called by the committee, the neighborhood committee there down below that creeping hillside to go up and investigate and take some samples or something. And the owner of the land is like, nope, don't touch it. I'm not doing anything. Like,
because he's going to be liable, you
think? Yeah, because then he has to, like,
geez, that's weird.
Do something about it, probably. But I don't know. I mean, there's definitely at least 10 or 20 homes at risk right there.
Oh, yeah, easy. Every time I'm crazy. Over on that side of the city and I look over there, I'm like,
it's just all sand.
Yeah, it's just
going like to sandy.
It's eventually just going to let go. And
well, like the whole coastline, if you drive from Ventura to Montecito, it's just the whole, it's just
that whole area.
The whole thing is just falling always.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It's not weird that it's falling next to houses, too. So, it's just something. It's a bummer when people move there and they don't know that, though. Like, one of the projects I've worked on was a nice 1920s George Washington Smith that the couple had just moved from Virginia. And they were in the process of moving in, got evacuated during the fire, and then came back in for a couple weeks, and they're like, oh, we really don't want to evacuate for this rainstorm. And they're just north of Oprah's property, and they're like, fine, we'll evacuate again. We just want to, like, live in our house. And half the house got taken out by boulders. Their master bedroom was a floor and a roof sticking out, like, cantilever. It was gone. Like,
jeez.
Their bed was gone.
Yeah,
never to be found again.
We went up there right after that and saw it was just like the roads were, it just looked like
it was insane.
A huge gutter, you know.
But that happened back in the early 1900s.
Oh, really?
And that's why they built one of the reasons they built like Olive Street, the overpass there was supposed to be, it was a river. And then they decided to make it a bridge over the freeway. And so when it did flood, that whole portion of the freeway right there at Montecito became a big lake.
Ooh.
And it's just, and that's, so that's why, like, when you look at LA River, like in Terminator or something like that, it's like, that's so ugly.
Right.
But it's, well, that's designed for the 100 or 500 year storm.
Right.
And
right.
They don't want people living there, and they don't want it to overflow and take out houses. Like,
yeah, it's, to me, it's always so weird. Like, you drive by rivers in the east, and it's like, it's a river.
Yeah, it's
you
currently, drive by, currently a river.
Yeah, you drive by rivers in California, and it's like 2 feet wide in this massive concrete basin. It's like, what is that?
Yep, it's what happened? Planning for the future.
So how do you tell people directions for roads now that you're on the East Coast, and how do you refer to California now that you're on the East Coast?
Directions for roads?
Like, because everyone in California says you take the 10 or the thing. No one.
I have no issue taking the off.
Yeah.
I think it makes more sense.
So you get on 95 and go up to Portland.
The PCH, which doesn't make sense. The 101. It technically is just 101.
Right.
It's a thing.
So when you refer to California, do you say back west? now that you've come, because you, that's technically for you, it's back west instead of everyone had saying back east.
This is the first conversation I've had about California.
It's interesting because, like, my friend that lives out there now, he lives in the Inland Empire and in Ventura.
Okay.
So he has a boat in the harbor in Ventura.
Oh, great, yeah.
And then he has
like a little vacation spot.
Yeah, it's his get out of the IE and be on the beach.
Inland Empire. That is.
It's funny. He loves it because, like, he's a photographer. He doesn't have like a 9-to-5.
Okay.
So he's always out there hiking the hills and stuff.
Yeah. If you can take advantage of the mountains, huge mountains in California everywhere.
Yeah. It's a beautiful place, but then it is like just a sea of strip mall stuff and all that too. But he's always talking, and you talk to people there, and they say, "Oh yeah, back east," and then it's out. Out west and out back west. East. That's how they refer to them. And so to me, it's interesting. Like, I want you to use back west.
Back west?
See if, yeah, because back you're west. From the west. Back west now. I'm going to see back if I can west. Start a thing. Like, you can.
Back east sounds smoother, but.
It does.
I can
it might, that might be the contributor to why people actually say that. My theory is that people say back east because it's just the natural migration of how. The settlement
started
by Westerners
out back east, and
yeah,
then
so
it went out to the west, like, yeah, we went out to the west, like,
right, so
it was a challenge, I think, to come out west.
Yeah, you'd
still
lose
is a challenge to make the trip back and forth. I mean,
not lose a couple family members challenge.
No, we didn't have to leave behind some
right
horses or something like
leave mom on the hillside. She wasn't going to make it, so. Yeah. So you're working over here at the co-work space in Biddeford here.
I just wanted to check it out. Yep. I probably will take advantage a
How
few
do
times
those work?
I don't know. I just toured it with Mark Feldman.
Yep.
He's a nice guy, and he runs it, and apparently in coordination with the main one in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do they work? You just pay a fee for either a floating desk, which is you just grab one, and it comes with like a screen that you can plug into and a
yep.
kind of a standing
desk. You're just
kind
of there for the day.
And you can utilize their little kitchenette, their kitchen. You can
yep.
utilize their printer, their conference room, a certain amount of time per month or something. And then,
right.
then they have fixed desks, and then they have enclosed office spaces.
Hmm. How do you
full.
Find that?
Just online, I just search for co.
I mean, but like, how do you like it?
Oh, I liked it. Yeah.
And
just
in
seeing
what,
other
like
people working around me is motivating. Like,
encourages
oh, they're working,
you to work.
I should work.
I should probably work.
Yeah, it was good. I think I also like just that a lot of them seem to be just pretty minimal in the design.
Yeah,
it's a little bit more modern. It's not.
Hmm.
It's a pretty clean, minimal space. So. Kind of works with architecture. The main thing is there's no L desks. Typically I have a computer and then I turn
right.
and I have the drafting space.
Sure.
So I'm sure they'll accommodate.
So what have you found to be the alarming or notable design differences between living in the West and moving out here to Maine, to New England,
just
aside from the CVSs?
Well, the CVSs are based on the old farmhouses and the capes and the colonials. I mean, the siding alone is just a huge fresh view of, I mean, we use siding back west, but
yes
it's just the housing developments, I think, are the biggest shock is just out in California
back west.
There it's just stucco, you know, it's painted stucco.
Yeah.
And it's modern to do
Drive
like
it.
The smooth coat stucco called plaster.
Yeah.
But out here, there's none of that. And so it's just a lot prettier to have those shadow lines and to have the horizontal or vertical
right.
wood
right.
siding. Sometimes it's metal, I'm sure. But the other thing is just the developments, at least here in the southern coast, is they kind of carve a street out into the woods and they dead end it one way or both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And they build a house on a half acre or an acre and a half around these two spokes.
Right.
And you can't see it from the road. And when you go down it, it's like the most perfect, pleasant, double dead end road in the woods.
Right.
Like houses. And all the houses are really well maintained, and it doesn't seem like there's a bad neighborhood, and it kind of feels like all of Maine is just this enclave of forested developed, like small mini
right.
Broad acre style development, you know.
Kind what's like, your feelings of like this more in town area of Biddeford and stuff?
This is only the second time I've been here.
Oh, yeah.
It's fine. It's so crazy to me that it's only 20,000 people. I guess there's 20,000 here and 20,000 in Saco.
Yep.
40,000 people. That's still way smaller than Ventura.
Yeah. Just by
Ventura
a little bit.
Ventura is 125,000. And it doesn't really feel like it because it's so squeezed right there at the avenue and Main Street.
Right.
It's like this bow tie. It's only like a one-sided bow tie.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like a 90-degree bow tie where it just spreads out east, southeast, down towards Camarillo.
Right.
And then up towards Ojai, there's the avenue development. But, I mean, all the neighborhoods are just tracks. Every neighborhood is a tract, and it's all based on one or two floor plans, either mirrored or two floor plans mirrored back to back to back to back to
right,
back
right.
with the same colors and the same front yards. And it's really sad because, like, to think that you're spending that much money on the same house that your neighbor has.
Right. That's interesting. I've never heard anyone take that perspective on, you know, like cul-de-sac developments or whatever.
Well, cul-de-sacs are the best. I mean, at least now that I have a family, you don't like people driving through.
Right. Well, it's interesting because from a town planning thing, I kind of like that. But I mean, I now live on the end of a long dead end driveway. So, you know, and I do appreciate that now that I have a family.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting to get the from away view, and that's what people will call you living here. You're from away, and like unless like your grandparents were born here, you'll always be from away. So like even my kids being born in Biddeford, like in a house in Biddeford, you know, they'll still not really from here.
Sad.
You know, it's just a Maine thing.
Most of the people I've met are not from Maine though so far.
Yeah, I mean it's
a lot of people.
It's changing. Have you been down east at all or up the coast past Portland much or?
Nope, never been past Portland.
Oh, it's so beautiful when like the added beauty of getting into these little fishing villages.
I'm super excited.
That are off the highway, you know, that there's no roads going through them. You have to go down
up
along
and back down.
Yeah, you have to go out of your way to get to them. It's so beautiful. And just, it's like going back in time into like a Norman Rockwell painting, you know, of these just little villages right on the coast with all these, you know, quaint old homes. And then these just spotted islands out there off of it and all these lobster boats actually working, you know, it's a working town, you know, out in the middle of nowhere.
You just don't see a lot of photos of Maine. When you live in California, you see a lot of photos of California, and it's not a bad thing. Like I love looking at my home state.
Right. Right. And I always thought California had a really good marketing effort because pretty much everyone knows like the feel.
They have the budget.
Yeah. Of California. And it lives up to it to a degree until you turn around from the coast and look at the traffic and congestion that you have to live in being there. But you know, like I spent some time.
Los Angeles is just a behemoth. I mean,
like every time we go out there, I'm like, man, this would be nice to live here, but I'm not realizing how difficult it would be to have to be stuck in that traffic and be there year round in that dense of a population, that amount of people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm realizing just how much it wears on you. Just coming out here, it still feels like we're kind of on vacation, just from the noise and the light pollution and the air pollution and just a lot of those things that even living in Ventura, which is a much small beach town compared to Santa Monica and
LA
Beach,
and
Newport Beach, Orange County, San Diego, even Ventura is an awesome place to be. And it's definitely found out. People have found out. And Ojai as well has been found out. Like Ojai, it's just changed so much from when I lived there growing up. I grew up in Ventura, spent time in Ojai in high school. Ojai was just pickup trucks and horses and a little tiny downtown with a couple dive bars and Now it's Icon 4x4 Broncos and Range Rovers and like $160,000 Sprinter vans. At least four. You see four every time you drive up and down Ojai Avenue. And it's just very, very different. It's a getaway for LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so homes up there now cost almost more than beach homes in some cases because you get a little bit more land. And
right.
You think that you might get like a hobby farm or like a chicken coop or something.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And so you'll pay $50,000 to $100,000 more for that, maybe.
Right. It was amazing to me. I spent, I think, 2 weeks in Morocco, and it felt like California without the people. It was very similar.
I've been hearing some stuff about Morocco and that style, Morocco and both southern Spain, Mediterranean, like Majorcan style architecture. Yep. It kind of feels like that's the next evolution of farmhouse, at least in Southern California. It's going away from board and batten farmhouse, like Joanna Gaines and the traditional American farmhouse. And now it's going towards like a stone gable with the deep inset windows and the steel windows. And I'm actually working on a project right now that with the firm that I'm with that is a stone house that based on a Majorcan farmhouse. Cool.
Is that in Santa Barbara? Like
that's in Ojai.
Ojai, okay. Yeah, Ojai is a neat place to go. We go up there and let the kids play on that big playground there, kind of downtown.
Liberty Park, yeah.
And we'll go by that cool bookstore, whatever that is.
Bart's Books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole open air bookstore that's open air. That's ridiculous. You'd never do that here.
Especially with books. Yeah,
yeah, right?
It's like they should not get wet. But they don't get wet because it rains like 3 inches a year, I think.
Right. So have you ever spent a full winter?
Versus 300 inches, I think it was here. I'm just kidding.
Who knows?
It's like Portland, Oregon. It's like 30 inches.
We're definitely not as wet as like the Northwest.
Is just dreary. Yeah. We were actually looking at Southern Virginia because of its milder climate. Mm-hmm. That's where we were planning on going until a couple months before we left.
So where in Southern Virginia would you have gone? I grew up in the Shenandoah Valley.
Somewhere between Roanoke and Asheville.
Asheville's nice. Yeah, Roanoke. Actually, I've driven by Roanoke quite a few times. I've never spent much time in it.
It's kind of an unknown.
Yeah, it looks like it's in this really beautiful valley, like with these mountains all around it.
On all three sides, yeah. And in town, there's a mountain called Mill Mountain that I took my bike out on when we were on our way. And it was just wild. It was just wilderness in the city. It's cool. Just a small town. I mean, it's 90,000 people, so. It's got everything.
There's something about being on the coast, though. I mean, I love mountains
and stuff. I'm so happy to be on the coast, though, now that we didn't really... It just happened. Like, it was kind of serendipitous. We switched. We were like, we're going to the coast of Maine. And it's just seeing the ocean is very comforting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just nice knowing there's where the land ends.
Yeah.
And then... You can kind of snuggle up against it and feel like there's the beautiful infinite and it's this unknown mystery.
Right.
It puts things in perspective, you know?
Yeah, there's something about that I don't quite understand, but something about being on larger bodies of water. There's got to be some kind of connection that we're made of so much water that interacting with that, it just kind of makes you feel home
something. Well, that horizon line, like if you don't, you kind of get it out in the plains of Montana or Wyoming where there's just almost an infinite horizon.
Right.
And the sky is so big. The sky just takes over. And then the ocean reflects the sky.
Right.
And so it's just, I don't know. We're kind of built, we're made to look up. I think that's what it is. And so when you're looking out at the ocean, it's reflecting the sky. And you're just kind of like in this trance of like blue on blue.
Right.
Something about blue.
Yeah, I had another.
I don't know why everything's blue. That's a scientific thing.
Well, yeah, there's
but
something.
It's beautiful. Blue is really beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's one of my wife's favorite colors, and she's trying to get more of it into our house. So, must be something there.
Okay.
But.
Yeah.
Anywho, how are you looking forward to your first winter here in Maine?
Like I said, I've only been in New England in the winter.
All right.
And. Yeah. It actually, I really struggled to pass my first architect's registration exam, and I think I failed like two or three times in a row. And then while working for myself, we took a 3-month road trip, and a couple weeks of that was spent in northern Vermont in the winter, where my in-laws live, outside of Stowe, and they have a basement, and I just locked myself in the basement for 7 days and was reading and taking notes for 8 to 10 hours a day. Oof. For 7 days straight. And then I went and took my first test, and I passed it. And I was like, yes, I could it took the time. Just
need more basement time.
And it was just dreary. It was terrible outside. And so sometimes it's good to have that focus, you know? Because in California, I almost felt guilty for not going outside every day.
Like, it's that beautiful.
Or if a week or 2 weeks go by, it's like taking this for granted. And I could be like mountain biking. I could be surfing. I could be running. I could be... And you could do that every day, and it kind of wears on you just knowing that you could do that and feeling like you have to take advantage of it because it's like this blessing that you have to take advantage of. And I think other people feel that way too. It's like if you're not like a semi-pro something, because everything's born out there, right? Like mountain biking, skateboarding, Long Beach, Santa Cruz. It's just...
Someone had said like move out of New York, experience New York, but move out before it makes you hard, and experience California, Northern California, but move out before it makes you soft.
Northern California?
I don't know if they said it about Southern or Northern or just California in general, but basically, yeah. And that's interesting, like the marked difference between seasons that you get in a place like this, like it's really... really marked, like, all right, here's another year gone by.
It's really grounding.
Yeah, there's something about that that's interesting. And I like the contrast, whereas California is just generally just a consistent, same, nice weather, which is great, but I don't know that I'd prefer that all the time.
Again, it wears on you because there's no way to mark the seasons or the years. If you didn't look at a clock... you wouldn't know that you're aging.
Days are a little shorter. And
there's a big, struggle with aging, especially like around the Hollywood and the celebrity, like forever young. And you can feel like you're forever young in there. You could just be driving a new vehicle every day, and it's blue skies every day. It feels like you're living the same day over and over. Like, and if you have a good life, then it should never end. Right.
It's like, there's definitely something I appreciate about living in a place like this, but being able to escape to a place like that for a brief amount of time and in the winter. It's really great. But I really enjoy the primary part of my life being in a more harsh environment to a degree. I don't know what it is or why I gravitate towards that.
Yeah. I've thought about that a lot. I mean, I think a lot of guys think about like how would I be or how could I survive in a certain environment? I mean, that's why the zombie shows and movies.
You're dropped on an island and you're by yourself.
Yeah, you're constantly thinking about what if everything hits the fan or what if I did have to, for some reason, survive out in the wilderness. And it's like in California, you don't have that feeling that you couldn't survive. But I think in a lot of ways, the California desert, which is most of California, Southern California, is a lot more harrowing than all the waterways.
Supposedly, New England, and specifically Maine, is one of the safest places you could live in the U.S. as far as natural disaster type stuff.
Okay.
Aside from there's some over near off Portugal or something, there's some mountain that if it lets go, it creates a tsunami that inundates us or something. I remember
there was an evacuation route. I just drove onto Drake's Island. And it always surprises me to see that evacuation route sign. And I think it's for tsunamis because it's always on the coastline. But I'm like, what? You're not going to have a tsunami.
You're going to get a tsunami.
We've had like one or two tsunamis in the past 5 or 10 years. And it's like the sea rose like 2 feet or something for a couple hours.
Yeah, I remember my buddy sending me a video of the harbor there in Ventura, and it's kind of like, you know, stuff was just kind of moving to the left a little bit consistently for like a minute, and then, you know,
go
like,
back and
we will never forget.
I think the tide changes in Maine are probably a bigger tsunami
than
California's tsunami.
The tides here can be can be crazy insane, especially if you go up towards the Bay of Fundy. It's like, you got to go down east and look into all those villages down east.
I'll go to Bar Harbor this winter.
That's the touristy part.
Acadia.
You have to check it off your list, you know, but there's so...
Well, just that whole... I don't know what else you say for that. What is that island called?
Or those Mount islands? Desert. Or Mount Desert. Mount island, Desert. Yeah. I don't know. Different people
Desert.
Call it different
things.
Mount Desert. I don't...
It's like a snow cone in
desert.
Winter.
Yeah, but there's bunches of other towns...
Yeah, Mount Desert Island.
...at the end of peninsulas that are just...
And hopefully I'll run into Eric and...
Oh, yeah.
Act like I don't know who he is.
He's in Deer Isle area, I think.
And we'll become best friends and
we'll
sketch together. And
sketch and go on walks.
Go on long hikes and think about our business plan.
Think up a reason to go interview him. Serious. Think up a reason to go interview him that will be beneficial to him in some way. And
he's down for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, especially if you're going up there. I mean... Yeah, maybe you just have to start a podcast. So
that's the answer to everything right now.
Yeah, start a podcast. But it's
I when you mentioned the living in New York and then living in California thing, speaking of the YouTube generation, Casey Neistat, I've kind of followed him here and there just because he's kind of engaging to watch. And
yeah,
he just
oddly is.
He moved to Los Angeles, like I think Santa Monica. Hmm. From New York City, which
really?
Is, you know, a big move. And
that's interesting. What was his reason for doing that?
I think he's kind of semi-retired.
Just try something different.
And he chose L.A., and he might be doing some real estate stuff. I think there's... But, you know, I think he talked about how just New York, it's just you can raise a family there.
But it's...
Yeah, so he's... He's got a kid that he wants to spend more time with. And
yeah.
So it's kind of a thing to move from New York to L.A. They're kind of the big cities, and
they're
kind of black and white, which
we
is
have,
crazy.
So we have Banded Horn Brewing, or I think it's just called Banded now, which is a distillery brewery here in Biddeford, and the people that started that moved here from Brooklyn. And then we have Time and Tide Coffee, which is right here on Maiden Street, which they make an incredible pistachio latte. It's insanely good. But they're just right down Main Street from the co-work space.
Okay.
So if you just go down the street, like you're going towards Saco, it's on the right down there, but super, really cool interior too, actually. I like it a lot.
Time and Tad. It's a cool name.
Yeah. But they came here from Brooklyn as well. People are getting out of New York and finding Biddeford for some reason. But there's several really good there's like little hole-in-the-wall restaurants that are really good. And there's also some place called Elda, I think, if you're a meat eater, that's supposedly really good here in Biddeford as well. There's the Palace Diner, which got like a 4-star in Bon Appetit magazine or something like that.
Oh, nice.
It's a little like actual diner. It says on the outside, ladies invited. It's that old that... They had to say like women are welcome. Yeah, it's crazy. Nice. But it's full on like little like silver diner inside, and it's not like one of these fake ones. It's the real thing. Super cool. It's right off Main Street. You'll find it if you go walking around. But there's a lot of really cool little stuff if you know where to look around Maine. Just incredible beauty and interesting
stuff. I'm excited.
Stuff.
I'm really thankful that I landed here. It was I don't know.
It's a good place.
I was out of nowhere, kind of. I mean, we have family. My wife's brother lives in York, Maine.
Yep.
And the area we landed, though, Wells, Kennebunk, Biddeford, Ogunquit.
Yep.
It seems like perfect fit.
So of the most affordable areas that you're going to find in southern Maine, Biddeford would be one of them.
Yeah.
And anything.
That's needed.
But anything on this side of the coastal side of 95 is automatically going to be a little
it's
more
the same
pricey.
In California,
but yeah,
being on the west side of the 101.
Yeah, the 101
the
or
101.
The 95.
It's just nicer. You don't have to deal with it. You don't have to get on. You know, you don't have to go past it or over it or under it. You just can kind of live a different. It feels like a little village.
Right.
On the other side, and then everyone else lives all the way up into the hills. And
it's interesting, like there's this weird like south between Biddeford and Kennebunkport, there's this basically like country forest right up to the ocean, mm-hmm. you know, and there's just endless, just different farms and stuff. And yeah, it's so beautiful. Great place to live. Super Not everyone beautiful. Move here though, please. Just a few, just enough to raise the economy.
Just enough to raise the economy. Well, here I am, Biddeford. Let's raise.
Single-handedly going to do it for us. Well, thanks for coming in today. It was really cool to meet you and to just hear about, you know, your transition in life. And if you need any introductions to people that I know that might help as you're, you know, finding your way here in Maine or whatever, just obviously let me know.
Sweet.
But cool to have a continual flow of people finding that Maine is a pretty cool place to be. So,
how many people would you say that you've interviewed
on this podcast?
Yeah, or have been?
Oh, from away?
From away, not out of towners.
Oh man, I bet you it's probably somewhere around 70% would be from away.
Okay, that makes sense.
It just kind of depends.
Well, it's a small town. I mean, 20,000 is a small town. I think
I'm talking statewide.
State.
Yeah, just very few people from Biddeford, probably.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I think the Biddeford area is kind of special, just because if you are looking for a smaller town, for whatever reason, if you have that ability as a family to be like, I want my kids to grow up in a small town.
Right.
I think 10 to 20,000 is a small town that has the things that a lot of people also want. In, you know, 500 people, 1,000 people, that's not most people wouldn't classify that as a town.
Right.
If it just has like
post
office.
I mean, we've got a Home Depot.
I know, that's crazy. It's great. You can do so much with that. So.
Right.
Wow, 70%.
Yeah, it's
Do you know what podcast number this is?
I have no idea. Oh, okay. You'd have to ask Tim. I just basically, anyone who seems like they'd be a fun conversation, say, hey, you should come in. We'll do a podcast.
Nice. So. Sweet. I'm glad to be a part of it. Thank you so much for seeing me.
Yeah, absolutely. And best of luck in your adventure here. Maybe I'll see you in the water.
This is like the very, very start of...
Well, that's cool.
My life, basically.
Right.
Like I totally forgot about... Everything. No offense to anyone that was part of my previous life, but it's like a clean break.
Life anew here in Maine.
Yes, reborn, the phoenix.
Nice.
Arises.
Well, congratulations on finding one of the best states in the union.
Definitely. So. No, I think so far it's lived up to. It's blown me away. Definitely.
Cool. It's home.
It's home. Well, hopefully I get one of those.
Yeah, these are cool shirts. I got it from the place down here in North Dam Mill, just in the entry. Do you know North Dam Mill here? So the last left you can take as you're going into Saco will take you into basically
the northernmost mill.
Yeah,
those mill
essentially
buildings.
It's basically right there. Yeah. But as you go down Main Street to go across the bridge to then go into Saco, there's a left that you can take, and you go into a parking lot, and it's a mill complex that it was really the first mill here that really got renovated and
That's
turned
really
into
cool
like
in
shops.
There. There's just so many young businesses, and
at least
the pepper mill.
Yeah, I mean, we've got
there's
Hyperlite
a huge textile factory
gear.
Making clothing. Like, there's a cutting floor.
Oh yeah,
that was so weird to see. Like, I thought everything was made in.
No, we hand do some stuff here.
It's awesome. That's part of it. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
There's actually like a farm across the street.
Yeah.
It's not like you have to drive an hour and a half out of LA to go to the
farm. Well, the guy who built our house actually runs an organic farm in Kennebunk. I'm blanking.
I heard it on the last podcast.
Finkel Pod Farm.
Finkel
Noah Wentworth.
Finkel, yeah.
I think it's Frinkle.
Probably.
Finkel Pod. Finkel Pod, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, Arundel, I'm checking out. I got to check that out.
Arundel's a really nice place because it's kind of, you're not going to get the high prices of Kennebunkport, mm-hmm. but you're still going to be on this side of 95. So,
yep. We'll
good
see.
Place to look into.
Fingers crossed.
All right. Cool. Well, we'll have you back in like a year and see how you're doing.
Yeah, definitely got to check back in. No, it's good. It's a good point in time. kind of survey of a person.
Right, Gavin, part one.
Gavin, yeah, age 32.
Age 30. We'll check back in your JC year, all right?
Cool.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
Later. You.